Footnote 133, text. Thus, authentic art, independent of the artist's intent, continuously confronts a given reality with what it is not, but could very well be. There is something contradictory to the idea of a conservative work of art. Footnote 134, text. Adorno insisted, and Marcuse agreed, a subversive potential is in the very nature of art. Footnote 135, text. In the separate realm of art, the antagonism between the real and the possible can be momentarily and partially reconciled, and also it is an illusory, scheinhaft reconciliation. It is an illusion in which another reality shows forth. Footnote 136, text. While unreal, the work of art may thus be true, and true to that reality with its potential, then that reality itself. The opposite of truth is not illusion, but reality as is. In a sense, art is the future-oriented pursuit of truth, verity, affaire, such as science is the past-oriented pursuit, that is, oriented toward the already given. Its form and its terms have yet to be created. This is what Adorno meant when he insisted that the artist sustain the sub-object dialectic, which forces art to articulate its own formal language rather than collapse the dialectic into either pole, for example, into pure tone or color, or into mere reflection. Hegel's logic taught that essence must manifest itself in appearance. That means that a representation of an essence which ignores its relation to its appearance is false in itself. Ansich, footnote 137, text. Page 223. To be sure, the meaning of form is not always clear in either Adorno or Marcuse. Style, idiom, tone, strictly technical devices, or configuration in general all occur under the heading form. Moreover, Adorno's correlation of formal and stylistic levels with social meanings are often highly idiosyncratic, however suggestive. The seemingly self-evident nature of some of these correlations should instead be reason for suspicion and should itself become a topic for investigation. For example, pale and faded is the light over his, Stifter's, mature prose, as if it were allergic to the happiness of color. Footnote 138, text. Whether these analogies hold is a matter for discussion, yet more often than not, they reveal striking formal and even terminological similarities between aesthetic and social spheres and illustrate how form, that is, subjective mediation, is at the same time the locus of social content. Footnote 139, text. And whereas the fetishization of art would, on the whole, fall under the general critique of fetishism, it is precisely the fact that art is exempt from immediate social function or praxis, which permits it to be a trial arena for alternatives. To be sure, society protects itself from the subversive potential of art by creating a special sphere for it in which it is declared autonomous but also therefore socially irrelevant. While society can thus safely and even justly worship art, this fetishization is also the social protection of such a qualitative enclave. The artist must not share in the fetishization, but must avail him herself of it. The social essence of work of art, therefore, always needs dual reflection. Reflection on its für sich sein and on its relation to society. Footnote 140, text. It must remain beyond the constraint of immediate application to the very reality it is to transcend. Marcuse fully agreed when he called for a kind of second voluntary alienation from the established reality. Footnote 141, text. Given the objectivity of the latter, its transcendence is always subjective and will thus remain a form of alienation, of productive alienation, unless the impossible final unity of subject and object occurs. Footnote 142, text. Marcuse had once envisaged the possibility of an Aufhebung of art through its concrete realization. In Eros and Civilization, and as early as the Affirmative of Culture in 1937, and still in Essay on Liberation, 1969, he projected the alternative world of harmony, non-alienation, playfulness, happiness, and liberation of mind and senses, which would make life itself aesthetic. Footnote 143. Since counter-revolution and revolt, however, Marcuse, too, has reaffirmed the dialectical function of art as immanent transcendence, as the critical wedge in any body politic. At the optimum, we can envisage a universe common to art and reality, but in this common universe, art would retain its transcendence. Footnote 144, text, page 224. Authentic art, that is, qualitative transcendence of experience homogenized by the culture industry, is not tied to a specific movement of or social stratum. Proletarian art is not inherent more progressive than any other. If such transcendence is an essentially quality of all art, it follows that the goals of the revolution may find expression in bourgeois art and in all forms of art. Footnote 145, text. Much more than Adorno, Marcuse was willing to specify what the aesthetic sensibility would entail in terms of attitudes and social relations. He emphasized the liberation of the senses and, at times, seemed to plead for concrete anticipation of utopian forms even in everyday spheres. Analogously, he seemed, for a moment only, to see such anticipation in a number of movements of the 1960s via the conception of alternative forms of objects or counter-realities. Art can try out new modes of relations to objects as well, including different needs, drives, sensibilities. Also, Adorno clearly put more weight on consciousness and theory as aesthetic functions than did Marcuse. Their views do converge on the rational status of imagination, a status it had held since Aristotle. Imagination operates consciously as the covetous anticipation or creation of alternatives, not as variations or refinements, but in terms of qualitatively new values and goals. In this sense, art was a social force of production for critical theorists. The formal principle of art is thus the new, per se, a category in its own right for Adorno, and whereas Benjamin too saw the new as a quality independent of use value, he thought it the quintessence of false consciousness, whose never tiring agent is fashion. Adorno took precisely the opposite position, thrusting its transcendent nature even prior to any content. The new undercuts false consciousness by preventing the enshrinement and repetition of any particular heteronomy. Its subject for Benjamin the flaneur does not yet exist, but is anticipated in the autonomous aesthetic act. Hence, the resentment against modernism by orthodox Marxism and bourgeois culture alike, they rightly experience it as a crisis, decadence, and attack it for being a qualitative category, not a chronological one. Footnote 146, text. Fond of invoking Rimbaud's dictum, il faut être absolument moderne, Adorno insisted that modernism was both a moral and thus aesthetic imperative as long as any given reality is not reconciled with its own possibilities.